Good day, and welcome to the Synlait Milk Limited FY18 Interim Results Investor Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. Your hosts for today are Mr. John Penno, Managing Director and CEO, and Mr. Nigel Greenwood, Chief Financial Officer. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to John Penno. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I've got Nigel here with me. What we'll do is we will go through. I'll go through the high-level performance we are using today to give a bit of an overview of strategy and update on a number of initiatives that we have underway. There's no real news in here, but this gives us an opportunity to pull the various things together and help you know talk about why we're doing the various things we're doing and where that's taking us. But overall, we're very pleased to be presenting what we see as a very strong result, one that is you know an accumulation of the various things that we've been doing over time and shows that the company's building momentum and picking up pace. The headline numbers, if you like, or the headline line points are firstly that we've posted a record half year of 40.7 after tax, which is up from 10.6 for the same period last year. The two big drivers of that, firstly, are the growth in infant formula, canned infant formula volumes. But secondly, and from our point of view, probably the most pleasing part of the result is a substantially improved result from our underlying ingredients business. As we'll explain, that comes from, you know, several initiatives and things that we've been doing end to end and shows the increasing maturity of the business. We'll talk in some detail about that. The second big piece of news is the way that we have continued to strengthen the balance sheet. This has been a real focus for us over the last few years, reducing debt to, or net debt down to 50 million from 147 million a year ago. On top of that, funding a substantial CapEx program supporting our infant formula business out of cash flows. All signs of the business is going pretty well. We've achieved strong growth, organic growth in our infant formula capacity, with sales up 36% over the second half of 2017. That is in the face of ongoing regulatory delays for three of our key customers. While we're very confident that we'll get there, it has taken longer. We will talk about that over time as well. To support the ongoing growth, we've got a number of initiatives underway to bring both scale and geographic diversity to what we're doing in infant, and of course, expanding into new categories, which you've heard us talking about for some time, but now we're making increasingly clear that we see the everyday dairy, particularly in the New Zealand domestic market, as a key opportunity for us. We're very happy just to talk about why we see that opportunity, not only for the earnings that it'll bring the company in the medium term, but also for the export opportunities that we believe that it'll open up and the way that it'll allow us to leverage what we've done in infant and what we intend to extend across in terms of adult nutritional products. Of course, we've continued to build the team and build capability with senior appointments and growing the team, and the research and development initiative that we have at Massey University and the resources that we're putting in behind of that. Look, we continue to see ourselves very much as a growth company. But 10 years in, we're just much better resourced to continue to grow, and we see an increasing number of opportunities in infant formula, but also in the new categories that we're looking to work in. The ingredients business, as we've mentioned, we've had a real focus on improving performance, both in sales, in manufacturing, and in delivery. You see that impacting both the P&L and the balance sheet as we have reduced inventory relative to this time last year and freed up cash. In infant nutrition, we've seen strong growth. In everyday dairy, we're just moving in, if you like. And then in adult nutrition, we're looking to leverage. Look, I'm not going to talk too much about some of the detail there. There'll be opportunity to talk about that over the next few days as we get some more time. But let me come back to our infant formula business. The infant formula, canned infant formula business, where we provide our customers with a full service offering, everything through from product formulation to market access and everything in between, is continuing to develop well. You know, we continue to enjoy a very strong partnership with the A2 company. We remain their exclusive provider into that all-important ANZ market and hold the registration for that product, and are pleased to see them both continuing to put resources into growing that market and working to turn this into an international product. Look, we see that the deal that they have done with Fonterra is a logical and pleasing extension to what they're doing, which we see bringing huge endorsement to not only the concept of A2, but the company and the products that we manufacture for A2. So look, we're really thrilled to see that company developing the way they are and are pleased with the way that our partnership with them is working. In terms of the other three customers that we're focusing on, the Munchkins customer for the US, they're continuing to expand in Australia. They now have nationwide coverage there, but we've made no secret of the fact that we believe that this product is targeted at the US. We are continuing to support them as we work together to get through the US Food and Drug Administration program so that we can begin sales in America. Again, it's no secret that this has taken a lot longer than we would have liked. It's been a much more onerous product than even we expected. But we are confident that we will get there and are continuing to actively engage with Munchkins and the FDA to move that through and gain registration. We're very confident that that will happen. I'm sure, you know, somebody will ask me when it's going to happen, and the answer is we're not sure. But we are standing by the announcement that we made back in September when we said that this would, you know, this is probably going to take somewhere between 6 months and a year. We're still confident of coming in inside that timeline. In terms of the Acara product with New Hope Nutritionals and Bright, we've been through the process of renegotiating those agreements, which now reflects the value of the brand slots that we've made available to these two customers. It did take some time to move them through into new agreements because of the nature of those agreements. Those agreements are both take-or-pay type arrangements, extend out of over five years and see substantial growth and volume from both. Now, in the case of grass-fed, New Hope Nutritionals and Pure Canterbury, we don't see volume in the second half of 18. We see volume coming in and through 19. And so the modest growth that we will see in infant formula volumes in the second half of 18 is primarily coming from the A2 company. To enable us to supply this growing portfolio, you've seen us spending capital to unlock infant formula capability and capacity through our existing resources. So we've invested in Wet Mix 2 over the last year that is now commissioned and is operating well, and gives us 80,000 tonnes of capacity from of base powder capacity from our Dunsandel site. And we've also invested, of course, in the Auckland line, giving us 35,000 tonnes of production capacity from our two blending and canning lines, and brings some geographic diversity in our finishing lines. That is all now operational, so we now have that capacity in hand. But are beginning to think about where we go next to support growth in our infant formula company business. And, of course, announced just recently that we have secured a site in Pocono, 28 hectares, which over time will allow a substantial infant formula production site, base powder production site, to be developed. We have now cleared the way to proceed to settling on that land. It will start to mitigate what we have faced as a single site risk with growing infant formula base powder from here. It allows us to access a second milk pool, which again reduces risk when we're making infant formula out of fresh milk. And Pokeno is really a good site in terms of access to ports for bringing ingredients in and taking finished products out, proximity to our Auckland canning line, and also proximity to New Zealand's largest milk pool, which we will take a small amount of to undertake what we need to do there with our formula expansion. Look, we expect that that'll be a $260-odd million investment, so it is substantial by the time we buy and develop the site and go through the first up setup costs, which we will leverage from as we put other plants on this site over time. We're quite comfortable that this investment alongside the current wet process plant that we're putting in here at Dunsandel can be funded out of debt because of the position we've got the balance sheet to and the strong cash flows we expect over the next couple of years. Let me just touch on our entry into everyday dairy again. So we've been looking for some time for a category that we can move into which offers high returns and would sit alongside and leverage off what we've done in infant formula. So we've decided, you know, we have landed on this, what we're calling everyday dairy. It's underpinned by the agreement that we have in place with Foodstuffs, a 10-year deal to put pasteurised milk, fresh milk and cream into their supply chain through Pack and Save, New World Foods, Foursquare and On the Spot. It is really a partnership deal. We're very pleased with how that's come into land, and that allowed us to make the commitment to spending $125 million on a state-of-the-art liquid dairy beverages plant. It can do, of course it can do these pasteurized products, but the plant really is set up for where we're going next, and that is blended dairy beverages for the New Zealand and international markets. Everything from cream products into the food service industry through to ready-to-drink infant formula products, which we see as a very exciting opportunity and that we've underpinned with the research and development centre that we have set up in Palmerston North. The reason we've done that is that they have an extremely good food pilot plant there. You'll see us make subsequent announcements where we we put new pieces of plant and equipment which line up alongside the plant and equipment that we're going to have down here so that we can be developing up the pipeline of products we need to build out that category. Of course, all of this needs more people. The last 6 months have seen us build the overall team size by 70 staff. Most of those people are either supporting growth in the infant formula business or in the R&D and technical team to deliver both improved performance from existing facilities and, of course, develop the pipeline of products we need for where we're heading in everyday dairy. We are pleased to announce, however, that we, at the senior level, we have recently appointed Deborah Maris. Deborah is on board and making a contribution already, and comes to us with very senior legal experience, both inside the banking sector with key roles, including Chief of Staff for ANZ Bank of New Zealand, the ANZ Bank, and also the Barclays Bank in India, and having senior roles within legal firms in New Zealand, Hong Kong, and the UK. We're also about to have Dr. Susan Horst join us as Director of Quality, Regulatory and Laboratory. Again, very senior roles in Friesland Campina in Europe. It's taken Suzanne some time to get here because she's moving her whole family down from the Netherlands, but we're really pleased to be welcoming her just after Easter. Also, Hamish Reid, who's joining us as General Manager of Brand and our Chief Sustainability Officer. Hamish brings a wealth of experience in brand development in FMCG and dairy, having worked for Danone in New Zealand and in Paris, and having worked in consumer brand development for Saatchi & Saatchi out of London, and most recently spending some time developing his own not-for-profit here in New Zealand called Lightfoot, Now, that unique mix of skills gives a pretty strong indication of where we see ourselves heading in terms of the way that we position ourselves. Our Lead with Pride program on farm has always been very important to us in terms of leading the way in on-farm sustainability. We're turning our minds and actions very heavily towards leading sustainability from a manufacturing and marketing point of view as we continue to consider where we might go with consumer products into the future. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Nigel. He's going to talk to the finances. I'll very quickly give an indication after that of what you might expect out of the second half, and then we'll open the line for questions. So let me welcome Nigel.
Yes, good morning to you all. So on the overview page, it's really just reinforcing some of the things that John has already talked to regarding our profit performance for the first half, and also calling out our net debt reduction year on year, which I'll come back to a little later on, particularly associated with cash flow performance during that period. In terms of sales volumes, look, there's two things to call out here regarding sales volumes which are important, because often it's been an infant formula-led story, and it's not that we're moving away from that. Clearly, our infant formula performance in the first half has been very good at 16,800 tonnes. But I should point out that even though our ingredient sales of 44,000 tonnes appears to be lower, or actually is lower than previous periods, it actually almost represents 50% of our total anticipated ingredient sales for the full year. And why I call that out is that that's actually a really significant performance, because historically we've been perhaps shipping only 40 to 45% out in the first half, and that's one of the reasons why some of our results have been second half based rather than first half. But in addition to that, we've achieved some upsides in the first half that we don't expect to have repeated in the second half. And I'll come back to that. But the other thing that I want to call out on the slide is in association with our finished goods inventory. We have actually been talking about the investment we're making in improving our processes internally. And one of those processes referred to historically as the IBP process, which is the whole of business process by which we manage the business every month. And a combination of the benefits of that, as well as obviously the performance of our sales and supply chain teams, has enabled us to get our finished goods inventory down to 35,000 tonnes at our half year. And you can see from the graph there that in comparison to previous half year performances, that's very significant. If you just think half on half, that's an 8,000 tonne reduction, which converts to around almost $35 million in additional cash flow in that first half, and we'll come back to that again on the cash flow slide, but I do want to call that out because I think that's something to be noted. Production volumes, this is just again reflecting that we are a seasonal business. We receive most of our milk within the first half, and we convert that into product in the first half, and you'll note that effectively we've manufactured about 61% of our total product in the first half. And again, that does cause some seasonal issues between halves, and I'll come back to that. But I also just wanted to mention that we had sold about 3.3 million kgs of milk solid in the first half. That was managing the increased infant program through our dryers, meant that we weren't able to quite process all the milk that we received. Gross profit per metric ton. Well, this is the number we've always pointed to as a reflection of the increased conversion of our products into a higher value add, and that it should be a point that you focus on. And you can see there that our first half result is nothing almost short of spectacular at $1,319 per ton. There are some benefits, and I should again point out this is not all about infant. We've actually achieved some much better results in our ingredient performance in the first half as well. So some of those things that we've achieved in the first half are some sales phasing gains, which are the sort of gains that we have determined that we've achieved that we do not think that we will achieve in the second half. We've also had the benefit of not taking up what was rather large onerous contract provisions that we had in the first half last year, which you'll recall we took up about $6 million $1.5 million in onerous contracts last year and virtually nothing at all this year. That's, again, a half-on-half improvement. And matters such as that have all resulted in a very strong first-half performance in our gross profit. And we then point to some of the reasons why we expect a slightly softer second half. The capacity ones are interesting because there's a couple of issues there. Clearly, we commissioned both our wet mix kitchen and our second blending and canning facility later in the first half. And so we will be absorbing all of those manufacturing overheads in the second half of this year, whereas our actual production volumes in the second half will only be about 40%. It does mean that we'll have what we refer to as manufacturing overhead under recoveries in the second half. It plays out in our full year results perfectly fine, but it does mean that there's a shift of performance between first half and second half that you need to be aware of. Pointing to overheads, half on half, they're up roughly $3 million, and almost all of that is an investment in our staff, and the majority of that investment in staff is actually focused on the growth of the business, either business development, research and development, and or leadership of the business. So these are areas that we continue to invest in for the future growth. We are a growth company, so this is something that you might expect as well. Note that the comparison to the last half of last year, they're only up $1.4 million or 6%. Cash flow. We generated $75 million of operating cash flow in the first half, which when compared to the first half last year, we generated $14 million of negative cash flow first half last year. So that's an $89 million half-on-half improvement. Some of the key movements are, one I've already pointed to is the better sales deliveries and inventory generating around $30 to $35 million in additional cash flow. Our receivables finance program that we have talked to you about over the last couple of years since we introduced that, and we've advised that the customers that we have in that program are Riesling, Campina, Danone and A2. So of course the more sales we make to the A2 milk company, automatically converts to cash flow as we invoice them, and so it has generated significantly more cash flow half on half, almost $40 million. Milk price, that always can create volatility in our cash flow depending on where advance rates sit versus total full year anticipated milk price. We see a small upside there. And lastly, as we increase our infant formula sales, of course we invoice our customers a 30% deposit when they put the order in place, and so that also increases our cash flow performance half on half. Then moving to net debt, over the last 12 months, we've actually generated just over $200 million in operating cash flow, and that's obviously a spectacular performance. It's enabled us to fully fund the $100 million of capital expenditure that we've had over that period of time. So, and reduce our net debt by $100 million as well. So, we're obviously very proud of that. And it also, whilst it may well be seen to be perhaps too low a debt position, it really is setting ourselves up for some of the significant investments that we've signaled that we're likely to make over the next 12 to 24 months. We've already talked about the $125 million investment in our liquid milk facility here at Dunsandel, and we have signaled that our intent to build a Pocono sometime over the next 12 to 24 months, and that will require an additional investment of about another $250 million. So the balance sheet is well set up to absorb those capital expenditures or those growth initiatives with a combination of the internally generated cash as well as bank debt. So with that said, I'll hand over to John to talk to our outlook.
All right, so, you know, we've talked about the increases in earnings of the first half, and, you know, again, it's important to understand that these have come from, strong sales in our highest returning products in our IFC business, but also from, you know, very good performance in that ingredients product, so very strong, important performance across the ingredients business, which is a big step up on where we've been, And we've had, some things there that may not be repeated in that second half of the year. In the second half, we're standing firm on, we expect our sales of IFC to come through bringing at about 18,000 tonnes. That'll bring an annual volume of 35, which we've been predicting for some time. And that will, that'll drive earnings, but then there are other costs that we will see coming in to the second half as we increase R&D spend, and as we have overheads coming in from the blending and canning line in Auckland, from Wet Mix 3 as well. Looking forward into 19, we see ongoing growth in earnings expected, driven by our infant formula business. We don't expect large earnings to come in from our new everyday dairy category into 19, but that will follow in 20. And we'd also just point to, in the appendices, the lactoferrin business is beginning to perform well again with increased demand and prices. And that is tucked away in the first half result. We're expecting that to contribute strongly in the second half and make ongoing contributions through 19. So overall, this is a result where a number of things across the business are coming together to drive a strong performance, a good strong balance sheet, and we have a clear plan for where we're going next across a number of initiatives and the capability within the business to execute on it. So with that, we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you. If you do have a question at this time, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And once again, star 1 if you do have a question. And we'll go first to Ari Decker with First NZ Capital.
Good morning, guys. First question, just on CNCA approval in Auckland, just what your visibility is on the timing of that, and then also perhaps just when you sort of look ahead in terms of volume and that, at what point, it might cause you an issue if you haven't got it in time.
The Auckland plant is now registered with MPI and has all the approvals in place to be an export facility from New Zealand. That's the first step in getting the CNCA approval in place. We would expect to get CNCA approval on that site during the course of this calendar year. And that is, that in no way will cause any constraint in terms of our China volumes that we need to move through this year. CNCA approval is not required for ANZ volume, and that still makes up the majority of our sales. And we don't expect that to change inside the time frame on CNCA. One thing that is worth noting is that late last week, on Friday, the Chinese authorities announced that all international factories were going to need to reapply for their CNCA licences. So actually that puts our Auckland facility and indeed our Dunsandel facilities in the same place as all international factories who are exporting to China. We see this as the start of the next round of increasing the quality requirements and technical requirements of exporting facilities as the Chinese follow their ambition to have only very high quality manufacturing facilities able to export infant formula products to China. Last time this happened in 2014, there was a substantial reduction in the number of facilities that gained licenses. We would expect that to happen again through this phase. And the other thing that they're doing is they're starting up an audit process of the CFDA processes that have, for everybody's brand registrations. So this is a continuation of the pattern we've seen for a long time now of the Chinese saying, you want to export infant formula to our country, you've got to have great facilities, and you've got to have well formulated and produced and formula products, and it's all got to be registered. We see our company very well positioned, the Auckland facility very well positioned, our brand very well positioned to continue to take advantage of a reducing number of brands getting access into that market.
Is A2 happy for all stages of its infant formula destined for ANZ to be manufactured through Auckland prior to CNCA approval?
Look, we don't disclose where our various customers have their products manufactured. At the moment, we're able to meet each of our customers' requirements across the facilities that we have, and we expect to be able to do so into the foreseeable future.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Gating item for Pokeno, I think you mentioned, looking to start there in 12 to 24 months. Obviously the OIO and going unconditional is the first one, but beyond that, can you just give a little bit of colour on the sorts of things you'll want to see in place, or the board will want to see in place before pushing a go button on committing to the capex associated with putting capacity on site?
So let me clarify just at the start. As of last night, we sent a letter to the vendor essentially going unconditional on that contract, having satisfied all requirements, including OIO. So that's underway. And that was sort of buried away in one of the details in the announcement today, so not surprised. No, I am surprised I didn't pick that up, Barry. You should pick up everything. As of last night, that's unconditional. Look, it really does come down to planning, getting resource consents and so forth in place. Groundworks has, as of this week, has begun preparing the site to make sure that we could have it up and operating by 19 if we see that as if we decide that's required. So that's spring 19 for FY20, but we're yet to make a decision on the exact timing.
Okay, and I get the planning and resource consent side of it, but on the customer side of it and, the first targeted product, whether, you're happy sort of starting up with ingredients like you did at Dunsandel, or whether you'll be looking to have, base volumes as part of the mix, immediately. Can you just sort of what are the key things you're looking for on that side?
Well, I think it's worth. Of course, everybody goes straight to what's happening with A2. It's worth lifting up a level. These days, I think more than half of the powder that we produce ends up in high value pediatric applications, We do see a pending, we have been turning customers down over the last 18 months, really, as we've had a constraint on wet mix one. That constraint is now gone, but we are looking forward to further constraints once we're full of base powder here. Of course, we'll continue to put manufacturing capacity to our highest value customers, but coming back to the timing of Pokeno, we would greatly prefer to be able to run it up on ingredients in the year of commissioning ahead of moving to infant formula type products, say year two. As we're looking at our forecasts, and in particular, looking at the growth in our IFC business that we might expect through 19, with ongoing growth from A2, and then with our other key customers, we would expect to have the regulatory issues out of the way ahead of FY19 and see volume growth beginning to come from Munchkins, Acara, the Acara products, and from Pure Canterbury again. And when you add those up, we see substantial volume coming from there as well. So we're looking across the whole. And then, of course, we have base powder customers beyond our own IFC business. So when we add it all up, we believe that we need those spray dryers pretty soon. We would like to run them up on ingredients in the commissioning year before moving to base powder as quickly as we can. But we wouldn't be building them if we didn't see IFB demand coming through. We're certainly not interested in building spray dryers for skim and whole milk powder, no matter where the destination is.
Sure. Just on A2, I recognise this will be challenging, but in terms of what you can say, but in terms of things like the volume cap and your arrangements with A2, where as you mentioned, you retain exclusivity into key markets, and you have an agreement that we know obviously still has some term in it. Do you expect the nature of the arrangements in place with A2 to change at all, during the FY19 year, or do you expect them to stay the same? And is there anything you can sort of say about, the volume cap and what's happening there?
You're right that we can't say too much, and the commercial arrangements that we have between all of our customers are confidential. What we can point to is a couple of things. One, if you look at the way the CFDA, the Chinese regulations are going, they're moving fast towards tightening those. There's no loosening of them, and we do hold the only registration for product into that China market. And we wouldn't expect that to change anytime soon. In terms of the commercial relationships between us and A2, in a business that is growing and developing so quickly, you would expect that is an ongoing discussion despite existing agreements because, you put an agreement in place for 5 years, but, the business is shifting so quickly. There's things to talk about all the time, and we do talk to them all the time. I would point to the public statement that we made at the time of the Fonterra announcement that this, from both companies' point of view, we didn't see this changing the commercial relationship between the companies. The detail of that, we'll make public from time to time as appropriate. But I'll go back to my earlier statement. We see the relationship that they've entered into with Fonterra as pretty helpful, actually, to the development of our relationship with A2 through the endorsement factor, but also servicing all markets with nutritional products out of limited facilities here was going to get pretty tricky. So we're not at all uncomfortable with the way that A2 is thinking about the development of their infant formula business as they try to globalise that product, and we are very supportive of their approach.
That's helpful, thank you. Just on sales phasing, and I guess, more broadly, Nigel, you've described some of the factors that influenced the gross margin contribution in first half. I guess, variability in the ingredients gross margin isn't, a new thing. And it was, I guess, more highlighted in the early days when you didn't have the gross margin contribution coming in from infant formula. As the business has got bigger and more robust, I guess, and that, would you say that you're willing to sort of move away from the milk price manual timing and you're sort of less sensitive to those sorts of things now and that we can sort of expect these sorts of things more in the future?
Well, naturally as we moved up the value added chain, it enables us to, I guess, be more robust and mitigate some of the realities of the risks of the milk price manual. Do we move away from being concerned about it? Absolutely not. But it's still one of the major policy areas that we have from both the Treasury and sales policies within our business to ensure that we manage our business as effectively as we can against that milk price manual. It still represents, the cost of milk still represents a roughly 70% of our cost of sales. We cannot ever move away from been concerned about making sure we don't expose this business to risks against the performance of the milk price manual. So I don't really think so, Ari. I mean, the fact that we're generating returns from other products that enables us to mitigate some of that risk is important. And particularly, if you think about the announcement today from the other company, we look at what they've announced in terms of their milk price versus their EBIT performance, it does ask you questions around whether, where some of that weighting has gone into the milk price. Now, we are in a position as Sinmate to be able to address that. We manage that. We manage that risk well, but nevertheless, we do not move away from managing that risk. I mean, I know I've overplayed it, but actually it's really important to this business to focus on managing that.
Look, I think, Ari, John here, part of what we're seeing going on is that we've actually seen a reduction in volume of, our ingredients business because of the manufacturing capacity that's being devoted to infant formula. And that's alongside us, we've done a lot of work over the years making sure that we build our customer base of high-quality customers who are looking for value-added ingredients, value-added milk powders, if you like. And then we've done a lot of work with our sales team as well. There's been some quite big changes in personnel and in the way we've structured that team and the things we've got them to focus on. That's come through as, improvements in sales performance. We've seen a pleasing improvement in sales performance in the first half. We're signalling that we shouldn't, it's a bit early to, we don't necessarily expect some of those upsides in the second half. But the team has performed well. We're really pleased with the way we've sold through the first half. I think it does signal an improvement in an area that we had pointed to previously and said it wasn't going quite as well as we wanted it to. The other thing that's washing through this result is quite a large improvement in underlying operating performance through manufacturing. So we've been pointing again for some time to a focus that we were going to put on overall operational performance through the manufacturing business as it matured. We are seeing significant improvements in throughput. Now, while you don't see that because you see a shrinking ingredients business, actually, if we hadn't achieved the operations and improvement in operations performance we have achieved, you would have seen a much larger reduction in overall throughput as we've grown that infant formula business. But we have grown it, and the current performance of operations is actually going to allow a further increase in ingredients manufactured, volume of manufactured volume out of Dunsandel next year, which across the 2 years adds up to about 15,000 tonnes of extra product that we'll get out of Dunsandel because of ongoing operational improvement. Now, that when you look at the margin and fixed cost recoveries that brings back to the business, that is very substantial and is washing through this first half result, and we expect to continue to contribute through the second half and ongoing into 19 and beyond as we bank those benefits, if you like. As always, there's a lot going on in here, and there's a lot going in the right direction.
Yeah, no, congratulations on the result and also on the talent you're attracting. Thank you.
And once again, that is star one if you do have a question. We'll go next to Adrian Albon with Craigs.
Good morning, team. Just a couple of questions, and then Luke might have. I've got a couple of questions, and then Luke, I think, has a question as well. Obviously, you've got quite a detailed presentation. Just trying to calibrate what you were really signalling on the second half impact. Are you suggesting, based on the Ripper sort of first half performance, that you're looking for a full year impact sort of greater than 75, sort of more greater than 70? How should we think about that?
Look, we're going to leave that. I know you'll want better guidance than this, but we're going to leave you to think about that. Clearly it's stronger. It's a big movement on last year, and whenever the numbers are moving that much, we're not uncomfortable with a broad range around where we might land. There are still moving parts in that second half. We're saying that, there's a couple of things that will take a bit of, that won't be quite as strong as the first half. if you take the upper and lower bands, you're in the right ballpark.
Okay. The second question, really for you, John, because I think when we go back to the sort of December investor day, sort of still comfortable kind of hitting a target sort of return on invested capital at around the 20% level. Like with some of the manufacturing efficiencies that you sort of unlocked, even in the time since we last spoke and stuff, would you see upside risk to that number now, or are you still sort of comfortable around that level? With a supersized sort of asset print to come.
Look, we're still comfortable around that level, and the upside to manufacturing efficiencies that we're enjoying, we knew were there at the time we talked about that. We've been working hard at delivering those over the last, that's not a new thing. We've really worked hard at that over the last 2 years. What is so pleasing is to see them coming through. And you know, there's the things that we've been really focusing on is throughput and getting our inventory down. Because, you know, if plant throughput brings, you know, as we build the infant program, we could have had to make quite large sacrifices in terms of ingredient volumes. And while the margins are much smaller, the fixed cost recoveries that they bring are very, very important to these, you know, these big businesses with high capital costs. And then in inventory, you know, with the cash that we've freed up through bringing inventory down, and that doesn't happen just by pulling a sales lever. It happens by getting a number of things right through the business, from planning, through manufacturing, getting quality performance up, and getting better relationships with our customers and, you know, shipping and supply chain. So it's those throughput and inventory measures are indicators of just overall the business maturing and moving forward and performing. Now, as we move forward, though, we do know that we will, you know, there's a bit of a headwind coming with the last 6 months. We've had everything going full noise and we've had everything going well. The fact that we're now back on the start of a filling cycle and canning and blending line in Auckland brings a bit of a headwind. And, of course, as we head into Pokeno and commission that site, that also brings a wee bit of a headwind as well. So we wouldn't be changing the where we see that return on capital number sitting.
Okay.
And it's only fair to say, Adrian, it's another time. So, you know, when we invest in, whenever we decide that we'll invest in Pokeno, that, you know, and we've signaled that it'll be a significant investment, as whenever we do something like that, I mean, in the year in which we invest, and this is, I mean, I guess I'm not trying to tell you suck eggs, but you'll get it. In the year in which we invest into that investment, you know, the return of that year might drop away because we don't have the EBITDA associated with it beginning to be released until future years. So you need to consider that return on capital as much as a future number, but not as a sort of a binary every year number. You know what I mean?
Oh no, that's how I do think about it. I was just, but obviously that's one of the key dilemmas in the stock because you've got very strong earnings momentum. And it's sort of calibrating that versus what sort of level is sustainable into the future. Sorry, what's that?
Don't worry, over to you.
The other thing I'd be interested in is what Fonterra is saying in their $6.55 milk price, because I take it you've left yours unchanged at $6.40.
No, we've been $6.50 for some time, so we've never moved. We announced $6.50 May last year, and we've never moved down from that. So we're continuing to sit at six. You know, I think the last time we talked about it was February or late January, early February, where we said we were staying at $6.50.
Okay, sorry, my apology.
So where Fonterra has come to is not a surprise to us. We're comfortable.
Hi, Luke here. Just one quick question from me. I was just looking for a bit more colour or, I guess, understand your thinking on the second half IFC guidance for 18,000. So what kind of percentage of that would be pre-orders as opposed to non-ordered product?
Look, I think we have one more month to cement. So by this time, we're really, you know, very confident of those volumes, all things going to plan, you know, barring some problem with, you know, but it's virtually all ordered at this point.
Okay, cool. And then just... Oh, sorry. You go.
No, I was just saying, look, I think there's only 1 month outstanding the way that our order profile works.
Okay, perfect. And then just, I guess, stepping through your IFC customers, with your Chinese brands, New Hope and Bright, have you seen a material drop off in volume given CFDA coming in and that those brands don't have that so they can only sell through Tmall Global and the likes of those platforms?
The answer is yes, and it's bigger than that because we only make China label for those customers. There is no ANZ label. So they are, you know, we have seen a significant decline in orders because we have been late getting the registrations through. Why is that so late? It's because the negotiations were pretty tough to get through because of what we were asking for in those agreements. Inevitably, that takes a little bit of time. We stood firm on the value that we saw in the brand slots, and eventually they agreed. But that has delayed the registration process because, of course, we didn't move forward with that until we had commercial agreements in place.
Thanks. And I guess just on Pure Canterbury, I noticed that you said you'd expect CFDA submitted by April, but previously you'd signaled that would be on the Auckland canning facility, but you don't expect CNCA sometime during calendar year 18. I guess what I'm trying to say is, are you signalling CNCA approval a little bit earlier so you can do that CFDA registration?
No, look, we have a reasonable amount of flexibility across the two lines in terms of where we register the primary products and where we're able to produce them. So there is some complexity in the way that those registrations work, right? So we're not at all concerned about that. It may be that it starts up production at Dunsandel and then moves to Auckland. We're comfortable with the flexibility that we have. It will take some time to work its way through. And you can apply simultaneously. So you can simultaneously apply for brand registration and for factory registration. I don't think you can read into it anything, the things that you're trying to. Look, I go back to what we said earlier. We're quite comfortable that we'll have CNCA registration in place for the Auckland facility inside this calendar year, and we're also comfortable that we won't be shorting any customers because of the regulatory status of our factories.
Perfect. Final question for me is just on public side analysis kind of shows that it's starting to get picked up through the Daigou. Is that something you're seeing on your side, or is that still too early days?
This is the Munchkin product you're talking about?
Yeah, Munchkin into Australia. So it's starting to pop up on Tmall Global and that kind of thing. The listings are kind of increased about tenfold.
We're watching that with great interest. That's fair to say that, Munchkins, we've always said they're a very sophisticated FMCG marketing company. They're very clever. Their primary focus was getting in the United States, and we're still very confident that that'll happen. And we're active in working through the issues with the FDA to make sure we get approval there. In the meantime, though, they haven't been sitting on their hands. They've got Australia-wide coverage through Coles and have been actively learning about how to get the product, using all the channels available. So we, like you, are watching with interest as they pick up volumes through Daigou.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
We'll go next to Jonathan Snape with Bell Potter.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Can you hear me okay?
We can indeed. How are you, Jonathan?
Yeah, good, good. Look, just a couple of quick ones. First of all, in the first half, and this is just a rough number, were there any commissioning or startup costs that you took above the line for Auckland?
Look, in terms of the Auckland one, there was a small amount of commissioning costs taken up in the first half, but not what I would consider to be material. Most of those commissioning costs we can build into the overall underlying, capital cost of the asset. But there would have been some commissioning costs that we would have taken to the P&L, Jono.
Okay. And look, just to circle back on some of these other brands, and I just want to make sure I heard you guys right before when you kind of put out the second half number for the canned infant formula at 18,000. I think you said that it didn't really include anything material from New Hope Bright or Munchkin. Was that right?
Well, that is, like, I mean, that is what we're saying. Look, we're not trying to disclose too much information other than to let you know where we're at. But that is as we see it. Now, that's not pure. But that is, we are waiting on brand registrations for those players. We don't see significant volume starting to flow or volume growth starting to flow through until 19.
Okay, so just can we get a roundup on where we are in those processes in terms of the CFDA submissions for New Hope and Bright, where we're kind of at in that process? And also, I know you can't give too much around on Munchkin, but has all the paperwork been filed? You know, have you had anything back from them probably since the strategy day, or is there anything kind of new in terms of developments, or is it kind of been radio silence with them?
No. Look, we're always deeply engaged in these processes with the authorities all the way through, so it's never radio silence. If we start with Munchkin, we've been engaged, you know, for a long time now with the FDA working through the various technical issues. This is the first time an infant formula has been, a new recipe of infant formula has been registered yes. into the United States for many years. I think it's well over 10. It is tough to find your way through there. All other new brands have just been copycatting on previously registered recipes. So we set ourselves a difficult task, and it's proven to be more difficult than we thought. But we believe we're in the final phases of that now, but time will tell. And we'll update when we can. In terms of ACARA, we put in the registration some time ago. We've been in active discussion with the authorities, and I can't tell you when that's going to pop out of the system, but we believe that, you know, all the key questions have been answered. It's not radio silence at all. It's ongoing sort of discussion. That's the same process that we saw with A2. We're very confident we're going to get there. Pure Canterbury, we assigned the agreement in February. That cleared the way to work through the regulatory process, and we believe that we'll be submitting in April. We're on path for that. But then how long that takes to work through the process is yet to be determined. Look, one point that I would make is that we have learned over time that the applications that we're putting in to the Chinese authorities are much more fulsome than some others. Right. So, and while we've been disappointed in some of the applications we've seen flow through, we are now feeling somewhat, pleased that the audit processes are now underway. So, while in the first instance the Chinese said that they were going to be inspecting facilities and auditing applications to ensure that everything that went in was in line with those applications. They got swamped with volume and said, no, we'll have to do that in the future. So it became a desktop exercise that they've worked their way through. They have not made as much progress as they wanted to in terms of reducing the number of brands in the market, but they are now rolling into a very substantial auditing process where they're picking up the dossiers, going back to the manufacturers, and working piece by piece to make sure that everything is in line with their requirements. It is our view that there will be a number of brands that fall away through that process. We've always stuck to our guns and said we need our applications to be absolutely bulletproof, to be leading, so that when the eventual audit process comes, we stand there while others are falling away. So that has been our strategy. We have taken a very rigorous approach to the way that we've applied, and we've kept revisiting that as we've watched others move through the process much faster than we might have. But today we remain confident that our approach is right, you know, doing everything above board, making sure that we get our applications through on technical grounds alone and on very well-developed and fulsome applications. Now, the reality is that just takes a little longer, but we want to be there in 10 years, not in, you know, 10 days.
Great. And look, just so I know if I'm working off the right baselines on these products, and if I look at New Hope, I think you guys disclose in there the related party transactions, that it's in the last 12 months, you've probably sold almost $19 million worth of product into that joint venture. And if I look at Bright, it's probably sold somewhere just over $3.5 million. And it seems to be volatile there for a while. Should I be looking at those two halves when I'm thinking about where the starting point is? Or should I be looking back at the kind of 2017 run rates for those brands?
Look, I think you're better off looking at the 2017, but you know, some of the disclosures that we had to make at the time of the NZX waivers that were put in place will give you some, will also provide some indication as to the magnitude of those contracts and how large they will become over time.
Great. All right. Thanks, guys.
And we'll go next to Sam Teeger with Citi.
We're just noting that we're about on time at 11 o'clock, which is where we plan to finish, because we've got a very full day, and we're going to be heading off to the airport shortly. So, look, we'll take one more question, and then we'll have to close down.
All right, great. I'll be super quick. Just on the lactoferrin, do you see any new lactoferrin supply coming online from other players over the next few years? And just wanting to confirm, is the way you get this through protein fractionation or some other process?
John Pino here. Look, we're pleased with the way that lactoferrin is developing. You know, those of you who have been watching this for a while will remember that, you know, we really struggled early on in this plant as we were learning how to make this product, and a key customer that we had developed demanded a very high, we were getting good prices, but they needed a very high purity lactoferrin. The entire market has moved to that level of purity. We were able to produce it. We've been enjoying very good pricing, very strong demand for those lactoferrin products. We registered the product into the United States, got an up in place for that for use in infant formula. We've got a number of other initiatives in play. So not only do we see strong overall lactoferrin demand, we've been able to differentiate our lactoferrin offering away from others, and that's delivering both good demand and good price. And we think we'll provide some resilience to the inevitable downturns in price that will come. Now, the lactoferrin market has been volatile. We have a number of initiatives underway at the moment to isolate ourselves from that volatility and make the most we can out of, you know, what is becoming a pretty important part of the business. In terms of your technical question, we do it through resin extraction. So it's not a protein fractionation technique. It's actually just you're pulling the whole protein out of the milk. And we have some proprietary techniques which we believe give our product particular advantages when used as an infant formula ingredient, both in the way we extract it from the milk and in the way we treat the lactoferrin. We spray dry it rather than freeze drying it. I can't show you an electro microscope image of the particles, but I can assure you they look very, very different and perform much better in infant formula. And we've been able to get that away. We're one of only two manufacturers globally who make a spray-dried product. And again, we think that'll continue to allow us to differentiate the product and derive good value for it.
Got it. And I just want to make sure I got the right message before. So in terms of the IMF canned infant formula sales guidance, in terms of why the growth rate has slowed in the second half compared to the first half, was it given some of the registrations a bit later than expected, or was it something else?
No, it's a first. It's simply the delay in registrations that we're experiencing from New Hope dual cannery for Bright and Munchkins for the United States. It is as simple as that.
Okay, and then final one, very quickly. So we saw in China the CFDA is being merged into a new entity with AQSIQ. Do you think that could lead to slower CFDA registrations going forward?
Look, it could, and we're watching that with real interest. Look, I think it's fair to say that it's already been part of our delays. At the moment, the organisation doesn't have a head, and while that'll be rectified very quickly during the period where, you know, these big Chinese organisations don't tend to do much in the period they're waiting for a new boss.
So we would hope that's probably more been part of the delay, particularly around the Okara product that we've suffered in the last 3 months. We see that a problem that's a problem that's being solved rather than a problem that's coming.
All right, look,
and
we're
that concludes our question and answer session.
I'm sorry, I said we're going to finish it off now, thank you. So we're well over time now, and we really cannot go any longer. So I just want to say thank you very much to all those that rang in, and no doubt many of you will see over the next couple of weeks as well. And if you have any follow-up questions, make sure you send them through to Casey Blatch, who will pick those up and as we can deal with them. And on that note, I'll sign off. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.